Blog Talk Radio.
It's Wednesday afternoon, and we're excited to be on the air and hosted by Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for today are Robert Brining and Joshua. We'll be taking your calls and speaking out on the topic of the week. We encourage all of our listeners to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Wednesday. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio. I am your host, Robert Brining. My co-host, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to make it in today. I know he has work. He was going to try to call in on his break, so hopefully Joshua will be able to come on and talk with us for a little bit. I just want to let everybody know that if you're a first-time listener, the Pause I Am Radio show is two days a week. It's Wednesday afternoons at 2 p.m. and is also Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Pause I Am Radio show is a part of the Pause I Am community, which is a social networking website for people infected and affected by HIV and AIDS. It's a website that I created. It was something that I felt I needed personally. I needed a support system that was based around friendship and truth, not anywhere. Like, I just felt like a lot of the sites that I would go to, it was more of people trying to pick people up and not really making friendships and forming bonds. And that's the great thing about the positive community, is that there's no stress. There's no stress to impress, because you just have to be yourself. You sit back and relax, and you just share whatever you want to share with the other members. When I was first diagnosed with HIV, I felt it was very hard for me, because I had a friend who had HIV, but we weren't very close at the time. We didn't see each other all the time, so I didn't have that big support system. And kind of goes into today's topic is depression, and understanding it and how to overcome it, because going through depression is something that a lot of, you know, people go through, whether you're HIV positive or not, and it's just emotions that overwhelm you, and it's very much hard to deal with, and usually it comes in, when it starts is in groups of things that you feel going wrong in your life, and it all depends, and like for me, there were so many things going wrong with my life before my diagnosis that when I was diagnosed, it felt like it was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was like one more thing, you know what I mean? And it was very overwhelming for me. And when a lot of people are depressed, they feel a total loss of control over their life. They get a lot of fears. And again, the feelings may all hit you at once, or they may come sporadic depending on how your life is. If you're newly diagnosed and you have friends that are in your circle of friends that are HIV positive and are living a happy life and with their boyfriend or with their wife or their husband, you're not going to be that depressed over it, because you can see your friends around you living their life. And that was, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do the radio show, is so I can bring you people and show you individuals that are making a huge difference in the world. Because it's not just the HIV, you know, an AIDS community that they're doing things. It's the whole entire world. And it's very important. And I have a lot of good interviews coming up. This Sunday at 9 o'clock, we're going to have on Sunday, March 8th, we're going to have, I'm sorry, not March 8th, March 15th, we're going to have David Capogna from, he has Dave's Pause blog on pause.com. He's going to come on and talk to us. We're also going to have Todd Murray, the executive director and founder of Hope's Voice and Does HIV Look Like Me campaign, will join us on March 18th. On March 22nd, we will have Christopher Murray, who is an HIV positive therapist and writer. We'll get some views and see some things, articles that he wrote, and have some discussions with him. On the 25th of March, we will have Corey, who is an HIV positive Apache activist, and he was featured on the cover of Pause magazine on March 2008. You might want to check that out. You can check that out on pause.com. And then I'm really excited that I got this interview. His name is Eric B., and you may have seen him on A&E's show called Designing Blind. And he is an HIV-positive, gay, blind interior designer. And it really makes you think, like, how did he do it if he doesn't see? And it's very interesting to me, because I read a little bit about him yesterday, and it seemed that he got HIV through a blood transfusion, and somehow, I don't know exactly how what happened to where he went blind, but it was at 17, I believe, is when he had the transfusion, and then he went blind, I believe, at 22. And so he knows what a lamp looks like, and he knows what colors look like, so he wasn't born blind. So it should be very interesting, because usually, from what I believe, is that if he's blind, I feel that your other senses seem to be a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more stronger. So usually, a lot of people will notice that if one of your senses is out, you have a stronger sense of, like, if your smell is stronger or something like that. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, he's going to be on. You're going to mark your calendar for that. It's March 29th, and he's going to come on and talk about that. And, again, the show is called Designing Blind, and he has a website called The Blind Designer. A lot of depression comes from anxiety. It also includes suicidal thoughts. And they're somewhat normal in people who are HIV positive. They feel a sense of nobody relating to them. They have no one that they can talk to. And that's why it's very, very important to reach out to these support groups. And not everybody likes to go to the support group and sit in a circle. Last week we had Brian on, the founder of Sin, he did it because he wanted to do a social group, not a support group where you're sitting there and you raise your hand and you're like, my name is Bob, I'm HIV positive, I'm 29 years old. Like, where it's kind of like an AA or a 12-step program. They didn't want to do something like that, so they created the Sin Yahoo group where they do social things. So going to groups and signing up for groups like that and the PosIM community and things of that sort and making those friendships with people is a way to step yourself out of your depression. You have to it's hard. It depends on how deep you're in it. But if you're really deep like I was, because I was just trying to get clean off of drugs. I was dealing with my father dying and then now becoming HIV positive. It was just very an emotional state for me. And I was in depression for 5 years. I knew I was HIV positive, but I kind of put it into a denial phase where I didn't really think about it. I went to the doctors. I got my blood work. My counts were good. I didn't have to go on any meds. So I kind of just blew it off and was like, yeah, I'm just going to live life normally. Of course, it all came back to me, when I'm out and I'm trying to talk to somebody and I have to now disclose to them, before feelings start getting involved, because that's when I feel like it's the right time to disclose. So, and then the rejection of people, sends a lot of fear and depression to people who are HIV positive, because not everybody that you're going to disclose to that you meet is going to be open and is going to be accepting and loving to you. And that's something that I've learned over the 8 years that I've been positive, that not everybody's going to respond with, I love you. I lost a lot of friends after my diagnosis. I lost a lot of friends after coming out and telling people that I was gay. People felt there was no need, I guess, to be friends with me anymore because I was gay. And that sent me into a spiral of depression. I'm glad that I did have friends that did accept me, like my one friend, Lori, who was there the whole time and she was mad I didn't tell her sooner. So, you have the both sides of the story. Sometimes you get people that want to, don't care, and they're like, oh, I knew all along that you were gay and blah, blah, blah. But sometimes you get people who don't even want to be bothered. I have one friend who I told her, and she never spoke to me again. So, not everybody's going to be that accepting. Now, anxiety is like persistent worrying, and a lot of people seem to have anxiety, especially when they're getting around that point where they have to disclose or they have to tell their family, what's going on, because they can't. It's kind of like a disturbance in their mood, and they can't tune into themselves emotionally because they're so concerned about what's going to happen with the other person. And there's different kinds of anxiety. There's panic disorders that people can have. And a panic disorder is when you feel unexpected or repeated episodes of intense fear and physical symptoms, such as your heart beginning to race, your chest is having pain, your shortness of breath, nausea, numbness. Things like that is kind of when you have a panic disorder. I have a friend who goes into panic attacks, and she has to take her, I don't know if it's a Prozac or Valium, or just take something. And it calms her down. And, these are things that are normal. Post-traumatic stress disorder usually happens after a terrifying event. And some people call their, their diagnosis, going to the doctors and finding out, a very traumatic event. And it is very traumatic because your whole life changed from that moment on. From the moment that you are aware of your status, your life changes. And some people change and go down the different, go down a path that they feel like they want to go out and share their story and share hope with people, because they felt a lack of hope when they were diagnosed. Like me, I wanted to go out and show everybody that there's hope. Our dreams aren't infected. We can still dream big. We're not going to die, tomorrow after our diagnosis. That's not the way that it happens. People are living. Medicines are helping people survive longer and fight this. And people need to be aware of that. And by putting out voices of hope, people will, start to break down the stigma and not feel so like it's a bad thing. Like, I just can't imagine if I was diagnosed with cancer, I would be upset, but I don't think I would be so worried about it, what everybody else is thinking, because people associate HIV and AIDS as a dirty disease. So because that stigma is around HIV and AIDS, people get depressed, or people, get really all up in arms, and it shouldn't be like that. If I had cancer, you would still be my friend. You know what I mean? So I just don't understand where people who know somebody who has an illness and they can't lend support to somebody else who has an illness. It's the same thing, no matter how you get it from me. If I had cancer, you should be my friend. And if I have HIV or AIDS, you should still be my friend. It just doesn't make sense to me that people are like that. It's normal to worry about when you have HIV, because a lot of things that people are concerned about is they don't know enough. When I was first diagnosed, I didn't really know. Well, I went to a Catholic high school, so as we say, I'm a recovering Catholic. Everything that I felt ever in school, about being with another man or thinking that a boy was attractive, was something that I was told was a sin. And if I was taught, this is what makes me mad. If somebody sat me down when we were in health class or whatever class you want to take it in, if you want to separate the boys and the girls in two different gymnasiums, that's fine. But they need to have real talk. They need to talk about the real things in life, like sex. Oh, my God, yeah. Actually, talk about sex in a Catholic high school. Talk about drugs. Talk about what happens to people who do crack cocaine. Explain what crack cocaine does to people and show examples. Allow people. There's speakers who come in who talk about HIV and talk about don't do drugs. But you know what? When I was in school, it was always just say no. Just say no. But you know what? Sometimes you don't say no. Sometimes you say yes. And you have to prepare these young adults who are going to be our future. You have to prepare them for problems that maybe they don't say no this time. Maybe they say yes. And that's what pissed me off, is that because a lot of my depression came from not being able to be myself as a gay man in school, or not even in school, just in general. I always felt like I could never, ever come out because I would never have anybody to ever support me. Nobody would ever support me because people were calling me gay in high school. And I remember I was like, oh, my God, are they going to find out? Are they going to find out? Please, it's a load of crap. I'd give a crap if they found out. Now, then it was a different story. But because I couldn't do that, and then I fed into drugs because I couldn't be myself, so I tried to medicate myself to change myself. So what did I do? I drank. I smoked marijuana. I did things like this to push my feelings of being gay down, because I dated girls and drank with the girls and I slept with girls, and guess what? It's not my cup of tea. Some people like it, some people don't, and that's just the way that it works. But it led me into a big depression. I went through, I ended up going from using marijuana to cocaine to meth, and I was very depressed and looking for myself. And the whole time I was looking for myself, I was already there. I just never looked in myself. I always looked outside for all of my answers. If I was depressed and not feeling good, I go out to the bar that night and I get laid, because that would make me feel better, make me feel like I was loved. And now I sit back and I look at it, and it's a load of crap. It really is, because I can't believe that I looked so hard for me, and it was right here the whole time. And I didn't figure that out until 5 years after I was diagnosed with HIV, when I was trying to discover who I was, because my set of friends and my whole entire life got flipped upside down, and everything changed. I moved out of a relationship that I was in that was bad, mostly on my part, but I still moved out of that relationship, and my whole life changed. I had my own place. I had my own car. I totaled my car. I lost the apartment because I couldn't afford it myself. I lost the job that I had that paid good. Everything was piling on, and it just hit me one day. You know, I didn't have a fear of going out, of asking people to go out with me or to date me anymore because of my status, because I became comfortable. The first time I ever opened up about my status was to, I went to a 12-step program. I used to go to NA for my drug addiction. And I remember I found out I was HIV positive. It was probably like 60 days after I was clean. And then I think it was on my 90-day sobriety, my sponsor, coach, asked me to speak. And I was scared as hell because, first of all, I don't do talking in front of – I didn't do talking in front of crowds. I wasn't really friendly with everybody. I really didn't know anyone. And I barely told the people in my family that I was HIV positive. Like, I told my mom, my partner at the time, my friend who drove me, who I don't talk to anymore, and my two sisters. Other than that, I didn't tell anybody else that I was HIV positive. It was a secret. You know, my mom wanted it that way. Everybody wanted it that way. So it pushed everything down and all my feelings again. So I had to light my cigarette. And they pushed it all down. I totally lost where the hell I was. I can't believe I just lost that. They pushed it all down, and I went there, and they wanted me to share my story. And the coach was like, you can do it. You'll do great. You know, you have a great story, and I'm sure a lot of people here can relate. And I'm like, all right. Like, I really didn't even tell them that I was gay, these people. I only known them for 90 days, so I didn't share too much. I always said, you know, I'm dating someone. I always used, you know, the other words. I never used he or him or my partner. So it's like the person. You know, that's how I would react to things, because I wasn't comfortable with it. But actually going to the 12-step and sharing, going to NA and sharing with everybody, it made me a totally different person too. It really opened my eyes and allowed me to unconditionally love myself, but also love other people. Because before, I was always one to pass judgment on other people, like, you know, laughing and making fun of people. And that was just the way that I was. And after going there and hearing other people share their story, I could never, ever make fun of somebody, because you never know what somebody else's life is like. It doesn't matter what they look like, what disease they have, gay or straight. You don't know what their life is like. You don't know how their day went this morning. You don't know what happened to them yesterday. So I don't ever pass judgment anymore. But I shared my story, and I told these people who didn't even know that I was gay yet that I also had HIV. And I couldn't believe I said it, because it was, like, so emotional for me. Like, I remember breaking down and my coach – putting his hand, you know, my coach, my sponsor, who was called coach, put his hand on my back and he said, you're doing great. Just keep going. So I continued to share. And at the end, so many people came up to me and said that they were touched by my story so much. And they couldn't believe that the story like that came from somebody like me, who was only at the time 22 years old. So it was very touching to share. And that's why I do this here, because it's important for people to know what's going on. And hope is so important. And hope is what we all hold on to as human beings, not even as people that are HIV positive. We all hold on to hope because we just want to know that there's a chance that things are going to change and things are going to be better. You know what I mean? I hope for a cure. Does that mean that there's going to be one? In time, I pray. I hope for it. That gives me strength to fight and to go out there and share stories with people, because I have hope that by me sharing my experiences with you. You relate as another person, and you understand, and you're able to live your life a little better as somebody who has HIV. Depression is not a character flaw. A lot of people think that depression is something that, what is it, is considered laziness or a lack of motivation. And it's not that. It's an abnormally low level of brain chemical. And it's a brain chemical that helps humans cope with stress from the outside world. And they are linked to unhealthy behavior such as overeating. People who are depressed, they overeat. They have very high aggression, alcoholism, drug addiction, and compulsive behaviors. And overeating, I overeat all the time. But I'm one of those people who can eat and eat and eat, and then I don't gain it. And my partner tells me, one of these days you're going to wake up and you're going to be 35 and you're going to get a gut. And, you know, it may happen. You never know. But overeating too much. Alcoholism, that was something that I related to. I would go to the bars, and on Monday night I was at this bar, and a Tuesday night I was at this bar because they had drag show. Thursday night I was here, karaoke. You know, that's the way that I lived my life when I was 18 years old, not even old enough to get into the bar. And I was in there living my life like a wild nut because I didn't know where to escape. That was where I could go and be gay and not have somebody judge me, the gay bar. Little do I know that everyone in there is the most critical people in the world, you know, how we criticize people's looks. But, I mean, that's how, you know, I was. It's funny. And drug addiction. Again, that's what I did. It went from marijuana, which was just something I did to drown out my gay feelings. But then it led to, you know, cocaine. And then it led to meth. And things got worse for me. And I couldn't deal with it anymore. And then the compulsive behaviors, things like that happen. I'd get up for no reason, call a taxi cab, and I'd take a ride to the city. And I would be going, walking the city and meeting people, going to the bathhouse, going to the bars and staying out late. And those are things that consider our compulsive behaviors, to just get up. And you don't want to do it because there'd be times I'd be sitting there and I'd be like, why am I here? Why am I here? Why am I here? Like, I couldn't do it, but it was just that behavior of, if I go down there, people are going to like me. If I go down there, people are going to accept me, and that's what happened. You know, people would try to talk to me all the time when I was in the gay settings. It was just out in the real world where nobody wanted to talk to me anymore. So it kind of made me a little weird to experience all that and to go to those places where that was my lowest low. That was my dark, my pit. That was my ground zero, and I couldn't. And I just couldn't go any further. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I saw that I was killing myself, literally killing myself going there and spending not a couple hours, spending a weekend there. And I look back on it and I think, how disgusting, because those places make me sick. And I couldn't even imagine. And if I had any power, I would close every single one of them, because not only – I understand that gay people feel they need a space to go and do things like that. And, yeah, they supply condoms, but it's not being used, and it's kind of disgusting, if you ask me. I mean, yeah, I was one of those people who went there, and I can't even think about it anymore. And if I could close them all, I think that it – I'm not saying, in my opinion, that it's spreading HIV and AIDS and other STDs, but it's definitely not helping it. And that's how I feel about that. If anybody wants to call in and share a little bit about any depression that they may have gone through, you can give us a call at 347-215-9442. Excuse me. Many people see depression as a sign of weakness, so they don't acknowledge the depth of their condition. There's one way to deal with the situation, but research shows that depression is associated with higher rates of mortality in people with HIV. The cause and effect of the HIV diagnosis and depression is not always clear. What's clear is the relief is out there. And if relief's what you want, then this book actually it has a lot of information. The book that I kind of read and try to get my topics from is a book called A Patient Expert Walkthrough, Everything You Need to Learn and Do the First Year with HIV. And it's by Brett Grodek. And you can find it usually in any Barnes & Nobles or bookstore, but there's a lot of good information for somebody who's newly diagnosed in here. It's very, very interesting. A lot of things that come with it, people think of as suicide, also that comes with depression. A lot of people kind of, you know, think some of that, you know, they intertwine it a bit. You know, people who are depressed sometimes commit suicide. And it's scary, actually, that I personally never tried to commit suicide on purpose. Do I think that subconsciously I was committing suicide when I was going downtown and smoking meth and snorting coke and things like that? Yeah. I was doing it slowly to myself, but I've never actually tried to do something like that. And if you are in a crisis and feel like you need to commit suicide or you're thinking about it, there is a crisis number that you can call, which is 1-800-784-2433, and it's the suicide hotline. You can call and talk to somebody there, because if you are having thoughts like that and you are depressed and you feel like you're at your last limbs and you can't take it anymore, reach out to somebody. Call. You need to get help. I have this other thing here. Researchers in France recently discovered that among HIV positive people who had a good response from HIV treatment, 1 in 10 committed suicide. So 1 in 10 people who took their HIV meds and were having a good reaction and everything was good with them, 1 in 10 of them committed suicide. These were people with high T cells and low viral loads. So these are people who necessarily their numbers weren't what was discouraging them and making them depressed. It was the overall diagnosis of having HIV and knowing that one day you'll die. Well, guess what? Everybody dies one day. Nobody's guaranteed tomorrow. So if you feel like you just got diagnosed and you feel like, oh my God, I'm going to die and this is what I'm going to die of, it's not true, because I could get up tomorrow, walk outside and get hit by a truck. And guess what? HIV had nothing to do with it. And if I would have lived my last day dwelling on my HIV status and something like that would happen to me, that would be a horrible way for me to live the rest, you know, the last days that I remember it like that. It would be kind of upset. Beating depression. Things that you can do. And this is something I wanted to really touch on, because I have quite a few things that I did to get out of the depression state that I was in for about 6 years. To get out of depression, things that I did was I went and joined a gay soccer team. And believe it or not, it helped me so much. It allowed me to open up and meet new people. And it gave me a support group where it gave me another place where I thought I would never belong. You know, I would play on different soccer teams and people would make fun of me or do different things. And I was never one of the cool kids, whatever they are. They're the ones that are all, you know, pregnant in high school and in jail and things like that. But all the cool kids, you know, would make fun of me on the team. And I actually, after finding out my diagnosis, I looked online and I saw that there was actually a gay soccer team. I didn't even know this existed. And I was like, I've been playing soccer for about 15 years, and I never knew that there was this gay soccer team that I could go and play and travel the world and play in tournaments and meet other gay people from other countries who also play soccer like me. I thought I was the only one, you know? It's kind of weird how things work like that. But I looked online, and I looked in, you know, Philadelphia area, and I found one called the Philadelphia Falcons Soccer Club. And if you live in Philadelphia and you play soccer, it's awesome. You know, indoor, outdoor, tournaments in New York, tournaments, I've been to Denmark, Copenhagen, I've been to San Francisco, they go to Australia. I mean, it's amazing. We play in the gay games, which is really, really cool. So things like that helped me step out of my comfort zone. It allowed me to step out of it and be comfortable with other people. And eventually, after a year of playing, that's when I started my blog. I felt like I needed to do something else. And by just writing an entry and sharing my blog, it helped me release a little bit. Well, then it came to the point where maybe I should tell my teammates. So, you know, one day I just sent out a mass email inviting them to my blog, and they all found out. And I got a very good, you know, response from them. They called. They were all supportive. We go to a tournament, and they all ask me about, you know, what made you want to come out and help people. I think it's a wonderful thing. And that's what people don't see. Some people don't realize. They think that everything, because stigma is so hyped and so many people have it, that these times and these moments when people like me who go out and say, look, I have HIV and you are my friends and I want you to know. And some of these people, now granted, it's not like a team of 12. So it's not like this team, you know, a team of 20 people my email went out to. This is a group that is all eight, all over 16, gay and gay friendly, so you don't have to be gay to play. And this has literally over 100 team members on this team that I sent this email out to, and I've got tons of response and other people who, you know, would send me back an email and you're like, you know what, me too. And a lot of people would like open up to me and be like, you know, I thought I was the only one. So it's by getting responses like that is why I want to share the radio show and why I wanted to do the Pazayim community. Yoga is another way that people try to get out of the depression, or meditation. I personally can't meditate, but the research has shown that exercise can have a positive impact on depression as well. So just going to the gym maybe, or lifting weights, or running on that treadmill that you bought downstairs that's sitting there for a year and nobody's using. Something like that will get you out of your depression by doing something that gets your mind free, that doesn't make you, you know, sit and think all the time. Because it's in our own head. We're our worst critics. We sit here and we pick apart ourselves, and we think that we're not good enough, and things like that. So it's very important. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a little song for you, and when I come back, I'll tell you a little bit about why I picked it, and I'm just looking for it. Where is it? Oh, there it is. And then I'll be right back.
Sometimes I get to feeling I was back in the old days, long ago, when we were kids, when we were young.
All right, everybody, and welcome back. And of course, that was Queen and Freddie Mercury singing "These Are the Days of Our Lives." And the reason I picked that song is because a lot of people don't cherish the day, don't cherish the moment, don't cherish the breath, that we live in, and it's important. And you know, Freddie, I watched this documentary they did on him on Biography Channel the other day, and that was. It was kind of very touching to watch to see, you know, the people who was close to him talk about him and how he lived his life so secluded and so afraid to be who he was. Because he was always questioned about being too flamboyant, and he said that I just stayed with him on stage and didn't follow along in his personal life. So he, you know, kind of denied a little bit about being gay and things like that. And then when he, you know, was diagnosed with HIV, and things he was going through that, and that was all kept private. And the thing that stuck out the most to me about the whole story of his was the day before he died, not knowing that he was going to die the day before, after, he went out on his balcony and made a statement that he had AIDS. And it was a big thing for him because it was something that he tried to hide from everyone. And the following day, he passed away, you know, from AIDS. And I believe it was his assistant who was doing the interview, and the assistant turned around and said, you know, in that video, because I think that was the last video that he made, and "These Are the Days of Our Lives" is what it's called, and at the end when he says, "I love you," like, that was his goodbye message to everybody who hated him or loved him, because he still loved you. And it touched me in a way that I felt like I needed to share that song with everyone. It meant something to me. One thing I wanted to do is congratulate Bob Bowers, the pirate. He is our member of the month on the Pazan community for 2009 March. And you can check out Bob's site at onetoughpirate.com, or you can find him on the Pazan community. I also want to congratulate Nick, one of our members from the UK, who just had a baby boy, Jake. So I just wanted to congratulate her a little bit publicly. Also want to remind people that we do have a Paz I Am group chat on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which seems to be not doing so well. So far, it's been me for the last 3 weeks. So we can try to see if we can get some people to do that. Also, if you're on Facebook, friend me on Facebook, Robert Brining, and then also become a fan of the Paz I Am radio show. We have a fan page there, and I would appreciate your support there. That'll give you updates, and I post things there so you know what shows are coming up because you don't want to miss it. If you came in late, I also want to make the announcement that I got an interview for March 29th, which is a Sunday, at 9 p.m., and I'm going to be interviewing Eric B. is his name, and he's from A&E's TV show, Designing Blind. So you might want to check that out on March 29th. All right. Back to where I'm going. Let's see. What else did I want to talk about with you today? I had a whole bunch set up, and now I can't find it. I also wanted to touch on if you or someone you know is making a difference in the HIV/AIDS community and would like to be a guest on the Paz I Am radio show, you can contact me at robert@pazim.com, and we can hook that up for you. I'm always looking to bring new people. I just want to show people that we have hope and we can still live. Here's the thing I was looking for. Overcoming depression is... Well, okay, I'm reading from this blog. Let me just inform people. And it's a blog in the UK called Stephen Atchison. And he has a thing called Overcoming Depression. And he says, "Overcoming depression is extremely easy. Before you say it's not, and you don't know my situation, the truth is that some people like being labeled. In fact, most people label other people to make life a little simpler for themselves," which is very true. You know, when I was going through it, I would pick on people to make it easier for me so I felt better. And that's why people picked on me, you know, to make it easier for them, make them feel a little bit better. But gratitude's very, very, very important. You have life, and you are living, and you are breathing. Acknowledge this for a few moments. Don't say it. Just acknowledge it. Acknowledge that you are living and breathing. And acknowledge another good thing in your life. It might be that you have a roof over your head. Maybe that you got a new car or anything like that that you may want to acknowledge that is important to you. Let's see here. Another great way to keep focus on things is visualize things. You know, one of the things that you may have read, if you read The Secret or saw on Oprah, is that projecting positive things out will bring positive back to you. If you walk around thinking that your life is horrible and it's the end of the world and nobody has a worse life than you and it couldn't get any worse than this, negative things come to you. Like, it's just the way that it works. One of the suggestions that they did on Oprah was actually make a vision board. And yeah, maybe some people will laugh at it, but whatever. If you put up like a cork board and you put things on this board that you want to try to accomplish, a friend of ours has a check there for $1 million. She wrote out a check to herself and hung it up there. I don't think she got it, but it's just the fact that you're projecting good things out. Maybe you want to put your car. Picture the car you want to buy, or you want to get a new house. So you're going to put a house up there. And you just envision these things in every day. It's very, very beneficial. And yes, Terry, art therapy. That was one of the things I wanted to touch earlier, is certain things that you can do to get out of your depression. One, like he says, is art therapy, painting, sculpting. Maybe you like to do pottery and things like that. Things of those natures will help you release more and not allow you to sit in your depression. Writing poetry. One thing that me and Terry do is we write poetry. And writing poetry helps me get my feelings out. Sometimes I have a lot of anger bottled up inside, but when I write down a poem about the situation or what's going on in my life, I get release out of it and I get satisfaction. So it's always good to also write poetry. Some people actually get over their depression by going out and dancing. A lot of people like to go to, you know, a club and just get out there one night and shake their groove thing, and that's for them, and it helps them release more. I know for me, I used to love going out to the bar and singing karaoke, you know, when I was a little tipsy, because then at least I thought I sounded better. But I would go up and I would sing karaoke, and it would just be such a relief to be able just to go up there and let loose. It just feels so good to let your hair down sometimes, and you have to not be afraid to do that. Don't put the wall up so high, because if you put the wall up so high, you yourself can't get over to see what's on the other side if you keep building it. So you have to allow people in. You have to give people the opportunity to open your mind and your heart. A lot of people think that they'll never be able to find love, and that's one thing that leads to a lot of depression, especially after a diagnosis of HIV or something like that, because then they think that nobody's going to want them. And I thought it for years. Nobody's going to want me. That's one of the reasons why I did, you know, do drugs and I did go down. Nobody's going to want me. Who's going to want me? I have HIV. And I kept thinking that because I didn't love myself. I didn't want myself enough. If you want something bad enough, and you have to be willing to give it to yourself. I wanted love so bad, but I didn't give it to myself first. So it left me standing still for years, not being able to move forward out of my depression. I would sit there and think that my life was horrible, nobody could relate to me, and then I start a blog and people respond, I start a website, and now, look, there's over 400 members, and I consider everyone my friend. I try to be as active on there so people see that I'm on there all the time and they can talk to me if they need to be. And, again, that's what the radio show is also for, to bring people in to share a bit. Because through sharing, we discover similarities and we form bonds, and then we make friendships that will last forever. And I know I've built a lot of friendships there that I would have never have had before if I didn't create Pause AM. I wouldn't have met certain people if this didn't happen. Facebook is good and MySpace, but I would have never have found people like Terry and Jeff and people like that on MySpace alone if I wasn't doing this site. And people like that who who respond so well and offer help. And it just, it means the world to me, because it lets me know that even in doing and designing and making and developing the website and the radio show, I'm not alone. So through the whole aspect of the Paz I Am, I'm not alone in it. With the radio show, I have co-hosts most of the time. I have co-hosts who call in. And Jeremy helps me so much on Sundays and different things like that. And then the greeters that I have, and then the people who just joined the team, all these people I would have never have met. And it opens, you know, it takes a brick of that wall of my depression down. Every time I meet somebody who is like, oh, my God, I love your site. Oh, my God, like this lady sent me an email yesterday on Facebook, and she goes, what is Paz I Am? Because a lot of people look at it and they go, Pazium, because I don't separate it. And you know what? I don't like separating it. I do sometimes. Like in the chat room, you see it says Paz I Am, but other times it's all together. And I don't hyphenate it. I just leave it like that. So she asked me what it was, and I explained to her what it was, explained the radio show. And she turned around and said, oh, my God, I deal with people who are newly diagnosed all the time, and you're going to be my number one referral man, which I thought was kind of cool, because, you know, I would have never have met this lady if I didn't do the Paz I Am community and create a fan page that she happened to join, or her group that I joined, or something like that. So it's very, very weird how everything works. And I remember I had a numerology reading last May, on my birthday. It was actually May 20th last year. And this numerologist told me that I like to surround myself with, you know, powerful people. And I just didn't understand what she meant by that. And now I look at it, and I think I do have a lot of powerful people. I feel like people who are on the site, and I'm going to say Terry just because Terry's in the chat room so he can hear I'm talking about him. But Terry goes out there, and he leaves messages on people's boards. And that's amazing. It's just an amazing thing that people will go out and do things like that. I am amazed at people that do things like that. He's a powerful person on the Paz I Am community, and he's a powerful person altogether. There's also people like Bob Bowers. I consider him a very powerful person because he is somebody who's impacted so many lives. Jeremy with his positively speaking. You know, people that are Marvelyn Brown with her book, The Naked Truth. These people are the people that I'm trying to surround myself with to make it better. Because with these people sharing their hope with me, I have so much more hope to share with you. And that's the most important thing for me, is to share hope. And one of the organizations I'm a part of is Hope's Voice, who is a organization based out of New York and run by Todd Murray, who will be on the show on the 18th of March, a Wednesday afternoon. Actually, next Wednesday he will be on, and he is the founder of Hope's Voice, and he's a young guy. He's like my age, you know, 29, I guess, around our age, my age, and he's out there running an organization that's sending speakers to go to schools and, you know, travel the United States and speak to students. How powerful of a person is he? He also has an organization called DoesHIVLookLikeMe.org. They have to check it out. And there's videos, and my video's there. I'm a campaign ambassador, and look under United States and Bob. And it's just amazing that he does that. And he has people from all over the world. I mean, he's been to the UN. How cool is that? I admire that guy. I mean, that's a powerful person, somebody who is making a difference all over. And I applaud and take my hat off to him, and he knows that, and I'm excited to actually have him on. And like Terry said, we want to show people that we have a community that cares, and we do care. We care a lot about everyone. Very, very important. Also, real quick, I want to mention there was a poem that I wrote, and I read this the other day when I did the poetry thing, but I just wanted to read it because I'm doing a show on depression, and this one kind of made me think of my whole depression state and coming out of it in a way. So it's called What Next, I read this last week, but I wanted to share it with you. It says, what's next along this bumpy road? It feels like my life is now on hold. I have no idea what's to unfold. I feel like my story should be told. There's too many out there that don't understand. This affects all of us, every child, woman, and man. We all are at risk, regardless of color, religion, or race. It moves like a chameleon, not in one specific space, not with one specific face. It led me to an awakening to love myself, a rebirth of a different kind of wealth. I have learned to accept myself. And, you know, that was just my awakening through my, you know, it just, it's kind of weird that I wrote that literally a week and a half ago, and that's what we're doing a show on. And that kind of is really what it reminds me of how I was in a depression of not loving and finding and accepting myself. And because I can accept myself now, other people accept me. And now everybody knows about me. Like you see here, I shout it from the rooftop, and I don't give a care. I don't give a hoot what people think anymore. And it's not about you. It's about me helping other people. And all the emails that I get, thank you for doing the radio show. Thank you for making this site. I'm so glad I have a place where I don't feel like I'm getting cruised all the time. Because I'm in a relationship, and I know other people out there who are in a relationship, they don't want to go to a website where they feel like somebody's trying to pick them up all the time, or there's nudity or profanity, or there's porn all over the site. And that's not what this is about. It's about real friendships, real bonds, and real people. Because HIV is real, and we have to keep that in the front of our mind. And we have to let people know that this is a real thing. It's not going to just disappear because we ignore it. And it's not something to be ashamed. A lot of people get depressed because they're ashamed of their HIV status. And it's because people think it's dirty, like I said earlier. People consider it dirty because it's a sexually transmitted disease. Well, there's a lot of different sexually transmitted diseases. And it doesn't mean you're dirty. People make mistakes. And you know what? I consider my HIV diagnosis a gift. And I get a lot of critique for that. A lot of people think it's a bad message that I put out there. But for me, it is a gift. It changed my life around. It made me develop as a responsible man, as a responsible human being. It led me to discovering what my purpose is, because I really feel that this is my purpose. My purpose is here is to teach people that living with HIV is possible and that it's not the end of the world. I felt like this is why I'm here. And I only discovered this in the last couple of years, like that I really feel that this is what I was put on this earth to do, was to teach people how to love unconditionally. And it's a really, really important message that people need to hear, because people don't love other people enough, I felt think. You know, we don't say it enough. I know I don't say it. After my dad passed away, I started to say it more to my mom and my sisters. But I actually just recently, even more recently, because my partner's like, how come you never say I love you? And I go, I don't know. It was just never something that I did. It wasn't something that I did, or I really don't even remember it happening in my household when we would leave. Yes, we gave kisses and hugs. My family was Italian and Lebanese, so when we went in, we kissed everybody, every cousin, every uncle, every aunt, grandma, grandpa, I mean, everybody. The neighbor was there from grandmom's neighbor, we kissed her. That's how we were, you know, and so I have that loving side to me, but it really didn't show me until I got an energy, session done with a lady named Mary Lou, who cleared all the negative energy out of my pockets. And yeah, I do crazy things like that. And she cleared out and said, you know, you don't tell your mom enough that you love her and things like that. And I really don't. I don't, because I do love my mom, and God forbid anything would happen, I'd be devastated, because my mom was like my mom, you know, that's like my best friend. And I tell her everything, and I just couldn't imagine it. And when my dad passed away, I know I had to be the strong man. I had two sisters. I was the only guy left in the family. I had to take care of everyone. I had to be the strong one. So I didn't cry over it or anything like that. I did in my own moment, but I mean, when we were there, I had to hold my mom up and my sisters. I was, you know, I had to be the person. So I hold a lot of that in. And I remember one way, Valentine's Day was coming up right after my dad passed. He passed on January 25th, and Valentine's Day, of course, is February 14th, so a couple days after that, about half a month. And I turned around and I said, I really want to take my mom to a play. I feel like It's Valentine's Day. It's the first one. It just happened. She's alone. And I love my mom, and I want to take her. So I went and I took her to go see Cabaret, which is phenomenal. It was the best thing in the world. And the girl, the original girl from Annie, who played it on Broadway, was the lady who was playing, I think, who was playing the lady on in Cabaret. So it was very touching because this song also meant something to my sponsor when I was in NA. And he said, you know, it's a song that means a lot to you, and you should listen to it. And I'm going to play that as we head out. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Remember, you can join the PazIM community at PazIM.com. We'll be here on Sunday with Dave Capogna from Dave's PazBlog at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I will see you here next Wednesday with Todd Murray from Hope's Voice. Hope you all had a great night. And remember, tell yourself you love yourself. It's very, very important. And this song is from the Cabaret soundtrack.
Maybe this time I'll be lucky. Maybe this time he'll stay. Maybe this time, for the first time, love won't hurry away. He will hold me fast. I'll be home at last. Not a
love me.